This is episode 122 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, 5 Ways to Prevent Falls in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hey out there, welcome back. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are your hosts for this episode. We have a very informative episode this week. We're going to be talking about a super-duper problem that occurs in nursing homes across the country, and that is serious injury and sometimes death that occurs after a resident has fallen. Residents are falling from their beds. They're falling from out of their wheelchairs. They're falling as they're walking around. I mean, it's a big problem.
I'd say that it's you know, one of the major, I mean, along with bed sores and chemical restraints and physical restraints, falling is a major issue.
Yeah. But we're not going to have this conversation alone. In fact, we have a special guest. Her name is Diane Carter. And Diane actually was on our show back in February of 2019, talking about restraints. Yeah, very good. So for those that haven't heard that episode or want to know more about Diane, Will, what can you say about her?
Well, she recently left her position as the founder, president, and CEO of the American Association on Post-Acute Care Nursing.
That's a PACN,
A-A-P-A-C-N, representing directors of nursing and nurse assessment coordinators in nursing homes. It was there that she managed the organization's growth to some 17,000 nurse members across the country. She was active in the development of the MDS 3.0 in the early 1990s, which is a phenomenal accomplishment, and all regulation that affects long-term care since. She has served on many technical expert panels related to long-term care regulation over her career. She served on the Advancing Excellence Campaign Steering Committee, the Board of Directors of the Colorado Culture Change Coalition, and is a member of the GIRO Coalition through the Hartford Institute with New York University.
And that's a mouthful, and we're super happy to have her on. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Glad to have you back on board again, this time talking about falls in nursing homes. And I guess we often hear that, you know, when people fall, it's usually an older person. And it's my understanding that there are statistics that show that not only do older people fall more often than younger folks, but older people that are in nursing homes and skilled nursing facilities fall even more often than the general older population. Mm-hmm. So I guess the opening salvo, the first question is, why is that so? Like, why are falls happening so often with our older population?
So to your point that you just made, let me just add a little bit to that, is the leading cause of nursing home admission is for rehab due to a fall outside of a nursing home. Someone falls at home, they lose their independence, they need to go into rehab, so they land in a nursing home. The other thing is that just for the why of this topic is that millions of people 65 and older fall each year. In fact, one out of four older adults falls, whether in their home or in the nursing home. And if you fall once, you're very, very likely to fall twice. They're serious, they're costly, and one out of five falls usually cause serious injury, like a broken bone or head injury. And the thing that's so dangerous about head injuries, just briefly, is they cause they can result in long-term changes in vision, reasoning, emotions, memory, and other mental disabilities. And the thing is, that's what leads to an admission to a nursing home long-term. We know that according to several different studies that about 13% of nursing home admissions are the result of a fall. You fell in the home, you end up in the ER, you have hip surgery, you land in the nursing home, and then it sort of tends to progress from there in terms of a decline. So it's a very serious issue. Now, why do elders fall? Some very important reasons, but the top three reasons are chronic health conditions such as heart disease, dementia, and low blood pressure, which can cause dizziness. And of course, that's always usually a factor in someone stumbling or losing their balance. And it's also just a part of the natural aging process. A thing that I've experienced myself is my father is 90 and he goes to exercise 3 times a week.
Wow.
For a while, that kept him upright. Mm-hmm. But you can see now that he is also experiencing the decline in spite of his, you know, will to stay healthy and upright. But anyway, so it's just a part of natural aging, as much as I hate to say that out loud with regards to him. In Australia, injuries caused by falls are the most common cause of death of people over 75, and I wouldn't doubt one bit that that wouldn't be the case in the United States.
Wow. I actually just had lunch with another attorney recently whose law partner, I want to say that he's probably about 65.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the newspapers here. He got up in the middle of the night and fell and is now paralyzed completely.
Yeah.
So, it's dangerous. It's insane how things like that can happen.
It's very dangerous. And here are the risk factors for falls. Well, we already mentioned old age.
Mm-hmm.
A history of past falls, of course, sets the stage for further falls. Cognitive impairment. Impairments in walking, dressing, and toileting. Frequently, toileting needs lead to falls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk more about that later. Lower extremity weakness or other disabilities, such as peripheral neuropathy or numbness of the feet or lessening of muscle strength. And I'll mention a couple additional things about that shortly. But that's very common in older people. Impaired or unstable balance or gait, dizziness, arthritis, stroke, poor visual acuity, lower body mass, joint pain and weakness, and poor vision. A big issue is side effects of medication. They play an important role in what happens with older people and falls. And, of course, in your home, oftentimes, you know, a physical therapist will come in and look at your shoes, throw rugs, slick floors. I mean, there's all kinds of environmental concerns that lead to falls. There's respiratory difficulty, and then your reflexes are just slower. I noticed that with my dad. I noticed that with my dad, where he just can't, you know, catch his balance if he starts to fall. And one thing I had never heard of was a thing called cataplexy, which had to do with a sudden episode of muscle weakness and falling down
mm-hmm.
without loss of consciousness. And this is related to narcolepsy, which I'm very familiar with. But apparently these episodes are caused by emotion, they believe. So if you've had a very upsetting situation, you're maybe more likely to, you know, have difficulties. So those are the risk factors. It's a lengthy list, but it's certainly something that affects many elderly people.
And that certainly answers the question of why that population is more likely to fall than other populations, because you're checking off a list of many things that aren't applicable to younger folks.
Right.
So, yeah,
right,
from
right.
a basic
yeah.
standpoint. Yeah. Is there a time in the average day of a nursing home resident in which, given all those risk factors, that a fall is more or less likely to occur?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I was the director of nursing a bazillion years ago, we pulled together all of the falls within our facility, and I've seen this throughout the data over the past, well, I won't even tell you how many years. But one of the biggest issues is that I was going to get to is, so what happens in a nursing home in terms of staffing is around when meals are served, so breakfast, lunch, and dinner, many of the staff and about half of the residents go to the dining room to eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And so they're in there helping people with feeding and eating. They're able to feed themselves. There's very minimal staffing on the nursing unit. And then, of course, if people have not been offered an opportunity to toilet before all this staff moves to the dining room, you see all the time people that are on the unit need help, can't get assistance, and they end up falling, trying mm-hmm. to get to the bathroom by themselves. Either because they, and this is also very common, is unfortunately, either because they delayed going to the toilet for a very long time and they often slip in their own urine, or because they just waited too late and they just can't get there and they fall, you know, with or without the, you know, that slip risk. Mm-hmm. But those are critical issues in terms of looking at the risk for falls. Mm.
That makes sense. I mean, that's an underlying issue in many of our cases that are many of our cases that are not even fall related is the lack of staffing. And so kind of like an indirect point that you made is that staffing is important. So when there's mealtime, if there is adequate staff, they're dealing with the meal preparation, the meal delivery versus, well, right. did Miss Johnson go to the bathroom before this? Well, we'll just check after we get through feeding, you know, such and such a person. And then that's unfortunately when it happens. And it's because you might not have enough hands to take care of everything.
Well, and I think it was last week I saw an article in McKnight's, 43,000 open positions for direct care staff in nursing homes. So don't get me started on staffing. There just are not enough staff.
Absolutely.
And this is what creates this, you know, danger of accidents.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things where, like, I feel like every few years when we were in elementary, middle school, and high school, there would be these reports about the most needed the projections for employment, like you're most likely to get a job in these industries because the demand is up, and it was always nursing for the whole time. It was nursing. If you want to be a nurse, you will get a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we understand a little bit better the individuals that have more risk for falling. We understand a little bit better, when falls are more likely to occur. We know that. What are some ways that we can prevent falling, other than obviously having enough staff? But even if you have enough staff, what are some things that the nursing home can do to prevent injuries from falls?
So we mentioned staffing. One of the things that all people need to be aware of, in particular family members, is that medications need to be dosed at approximately a half to a third less, because older people's liver and kidney function is compromised, they have a lower body weight, and they may suffer from malnutrition. These medications are very strong, and they can lead to dizziness and falls. There's also the issue of, anytime I see a medication change, am I looking at what those risks are associated with that particular drug?
Mm-hmm.
There's a greater risk of falls in the first 6 weeks after admission. So it's really important to be alert staff and be very cognizant of that additional risk factor. We know that drugs cause toxicity, and looking at those therapeutic levels and being certain that they're correct for older people is important. Psychotropic drugs, when we're treating especially behavioral issues with antipsychotics, is absolutely inappropriate, and these drugs cause many falls in long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
Diuretics are another drug, water pills, probably most of the public is familiar with these, frequently cause issues with low blood pressure, because it causes someone to have to go to the bathroom more frequently, and you see an increase in incidence of low blood pressure, which, again, the cardiovascular drugs, I think I've mentioned, dizziness, weakness, fatigue, some of the... I already mentioned, is something changed? Whenever I see a fall or anything happen that looks different than what I've seen in the past, I start thinking about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Digitalis is a heart rate drug, Dilantin for seizures, diuretic seizures. I mean, there are many organizations out there fighting tooth and toenail to get rid of all these antipsychotics in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
Other risks include an unstable gait. And you want to look for, is there a good restorative program in place? Are clothing sizes right? Do their shoes fit? You know, as you lose a lot of weight, your shoes get a lot looser and you see stumbling. You want gait training, either from nurses or PT.
Mm-hmm.
hearing and vision can cause a lot of problems with not understanding your environment. Infections. I remember when I was a DON, how many times did I figure out, I figured out it was an infection because someone fell first. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes the first sign of a upper respiratory or a urinary tract infection is a fall. Mm. Oddly. I mean, it's, they don't spike a fever usually if they're very old. So, low blood sugars. We're seeing many, many more people with diabetes in the nursing home, and that can cause
just to be clear for the audience, is the reason why that it's a first sign of infection for you, that, or the fall is a first sign of infection, is because that all attributes to dizziness.
It attributes to dizziness, but also because the resident does not spike a fever, and you don't see the usual signs of infection in someone who's very elderly, the first sign may be that they fell. And then you call and you start asking questions, and then you find out they do have a UTI or a urinary tract infection or an upper respiratory infection. It can be the first sign as a fall of the infection. Yeah. Dehydration, we all know that just from personal experience, how that can cause dehydration. Constipation is another problem. Pain. And then there are just bazillions of things I could talk about, but I won't today. In terms of doing an environmental assessment around lighting, furniture, floors, accessible call lights. Of course, accessible call lights being almost the most important is, can they get help if they need it? And then, of course, you got to answer the call light.
Right.
That's right. And that goes to, if I can interject, that goes directly to the toileting issue most of the time.
Exactly.
If they need to go to the bathroom, they're going to hit the button. And if somebody doesn't come, they would rather chance walking to the bathroom than go in the bed. And that's when the fall occurs.
Right.
Dan, you said something very interesting. And I'm not quite sure if we talked about this in your previous episode. But you mentioned something along the lines of whatever the medication is. It needs to be reduced by a certain percentage because they're too strong. Can you speak to that? And to, should the, generally don't the physicians already take that into account?
Well, you hope that the physicians take it into account. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, I mean, doctors are only required to come to the facility, twice for 30 days and then every 90 days thereafter. So they're not going to know how a drug is affecting a resident. But nurses should be alert and cognizant of the fact that, you know, someone has gotten a drug and what effect it seems to be having on them. There are certain drugs where you routinely draw tox levels just to see if how they're reacting to the medication. And those are things that are done routinely, like Dilantin and Digitalis. But you want to just be aware that any time a drug changes, so someone's functioning fairly well, and then all of a sudden you see that they're sleeping in their wheelchair, they're not eating the kinds of foods they usually eat. I mean, a nurse aide is often the very best person to see, oh, she always eats sweets, and now she's not interested in any of her food, or, you know, those kind of subtle changes. And they can be quite subtle. But yes, those need to be looked at very carefully.
Right. And you mentioned bright lights. You mentioned, I believe you mentioned fall pads, that kind of thing. How common are those? Like,
Well, I think it's a part of an overall assessment. And when I think of like lighting, you know, a lot of nursing homes, for example, a lot of nursing homes, you know, and they have these long hallways with a door at the end with a window there. So as a resident heads down that hallway, the closer they get to that really bright light right in their eyes, they're much more likely to fall.
Yeah.
These weird patterns and carpetings and things like that. There's certain colors that should be used. I mean, there's all sorts of things that need to be assessed and really thought of as you're looking at care in a facility. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but
no, you did.
There's all kinds of things you need to look at. That's just really skimming the surface of all of these issues. Lighting in the rooms. I mean, just all kinds of things that really, really help with preventing falls. that are environmental.
So what are some of the signs that physical signs that someone has fallen?
Well, I mean, I would tend to look for, of course, bruising, skin tears, any sort of assessment about how those happened, and people should have some understanding of that. We used to say, oh, everybody has skin tears. Everybody has, you know. Well, now, I mean, we really need to be looking at skin tears. How are they treated? This is the person on Coumadin, for instance, anticoagulant. What's being done to prevent any kind of skin tears? And so there's a whole list of assessments that can be done to I don't know if the right word, you're a lawyer, but, you know, you're trying to mitigate against those things happening again.
Yeah.
People do get skin tears. They do get, you know, they fall, different things. But, you know, the vast majority of falls, as I mentioned in the restraint thing, never lead to injury. But we need to be understanding why it occurred anyway. It's not something like, oh, well, he falls all the time. Right. And it used to be much more of a, I would call it an ageist attitude of, well, they're old. That always happens to old people.
There's nothing you
can
do. We
don't want to see that.
Yeah.
We want someone to look at what happened, what are the risk factors, and how are we going to change the care to make it so the person doesn't have any sort of events like that again. Mm-hmm. It may happen anyway, but you want to know that that was looked at.
Right. And I think that anytime there's a red light should go off is if you do have skin tears accompanied with diminished capacity.
Right.
Because that's definitely a sign that there's been some type of head trauma with the fall. But can you speak a little bit about, you mentioned Coumadin. Why is Coumadin relevant to assessing a fall and associated with falls?
Well, it's an anticoagulant, right? Because so many people, as they age, develop atrial fibrillation is actually the diagnosis. And then they'll put them on some Coumadin to address the atrial fibrillation. So here's the issue. That needs to be measured every week. Those results need to be monitored very, very closely. They need to go to the physician. The physician needs to be looking at what's going on. And those and warfarin or Coumadin are what cause the skin tears. Or I don't know if you've ever seen, it's just a horrible sight. When an elderly person's on Coumadin, and they fall, and their whole side of their face is bruised up, and their elbows, and of course, once the bleeding is, you know, started under the surface of the skin, you're going to see some skin tears, because that drug is just predisposes you to issues with bleeding under the skin. It's an anticoagulant, and so, you know, really just the smallest bump can cause bruising that doesn't look too hot. Now, having said that, I mean, there are ways to distinguish between what's normal bump, bruising, whatever, and maybe somebody hit somebody or something, you know, something really horrible. Right. I probably can't go into that today, but we have means of understanding how those things occur. And it's not just, you know, oh, well, they're old.
Right.
Which you used to hear all the time. Yeah.
Diane, walk us through how do families get involved with fall prevention in nursing homes with their loved ones? Like, what are some of the steps they can take to make sure that their loved one is as safe as possible from the injuries from falls?
Well, I'm going to, you know, return to my, I'm going to back into my nursing background because this is absolutely so important.
By all means, go ahead.
It's worth noting that in a study done in hospitals in America, 38% to 78% of the falls can be anticipated.
Wow.
That means to me they could have been prevented.
Right.
And I believe this is true in nursing homes as well, not just hospitals. So the very, very most important step, first thing to do is the minute that your relative is admitted to a nursing home, the family member needs to be there and demand, if it's not already being done, and I don't mean a federally mandated tool like the MDF, I mean getting in there and ensuring that an extensive, detailed nursing assessment was done to identify all of the risk factors I've just mentioned. I went through that whole list, and that and what effect that might have on the resident. And those family members can tell you, if not the residents, I don't mean to speak for the residents, mm-hmm. but the family members need to be there talking about, he's been at home, he's had, you know, several falls, this is what we think happened. So you get a good sense of assessment in terms of this particular individual and what happens to them. Mm-hmm. Then you want to look at, you know, what are the interventions, the nursing interventions that should have been done to preclude the fall. For instance, the one I think of most commonly is this issue with trying to get to the bathroom and not having access because of staffing. And in that case, if the person has urgency to get to the bathroom or whatever the assessment might be certain you're addressing that. Mm-hmm. And so what you're going to do is basically do what's called an extensive bowel and bladder program, which identifies when the resident is most likely to need to use the toilet, with follow-through by staff to take him to the toilet. It's absolutely critical. You'll prevent the majority of falls by doing that. And it needs to be, I've mentioned for 100 times, many of the federal regulations wouldn't be necessary if we would just individualize assessment for each resident.
Yeah.
So you want to go through your list of risk factors and identify what the risk factors are, and then look at what the nursing intervention should be, and then you develop a care plan. And family members should be involved in that care planning and understanding and watching out, too, for, you know, I've got a care plan for my father or mother, and, you know, is the nurse aide or whoever assists with toileting or whatever the issue might be, mm-hmm. are they following, you know, through? Is it getting done? And then there needs to be that continuous evaluation. Like I said, you have a set of medications. The fewer medications, the better. I mean, the requirement is not 7 to 9, but it should be even less than that. You are constantly evaluating and going through your process of, has something changed? We didn't have any falls for 6 months. Now we're having a fall. Was it a med? Was it, you know, what was it? And then, do we see staff, you know, that have been educated and are competent in following through? And so I like to say, you know, as our title said, you know, what are the 5 most common causes of, or ways to prevent falls is, and this is the nursing process. You do an assessment, you do an intervention and a care plan, mm-hmm. you continuously evaluate, and of course, you follow through. And, you know, the care plan's only going to be as good as the people who are, you know, following through on implementation of that care plan. And that family member is just so instrumental to getting that plan down to a very individualized assessment that meets the needs of their residents. And again, you know, I already mentioned it, but I can't say enough about staffing. It's pretty much all I read these days because it's sort of, you know, my cross to bear to keep talking about staffing and nursing home.
Well, that seems to be an overarching theme of all these shows is family participation and staffing. But Diane, you've been marvelous once again. This is all great information that our audience can definitely use in the future. How do people get in contact with you if they want to ask a question, or if they're a nurse out there and wants to participate? And we were calling it a PACN. Like, how do you shorten the American Association on Post-Acute Care Nursing?
I call it a PACN.
Yeah, PACN. I got it. Okay, very good. How do people get a hold of you?
Okay, my email address is Diane Carter, mm-hmm. DianeCarter, LTC, as in long-term care. So it's ltc.rn@gmail.com.
And we're going to put that up there.
It'll be on the screen for everybody. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Go ahead.
Let me mention 2 other things. When you're looking at an admission for a resident in a nursing home, ask about staffing, get all the information that you can. As you're walking around, maybe visiting a facility, mm-hmm. watch to see if call lights are answered quickly.
Yeah.
critical pieces.
Oh, that's a good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you, Diane. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
All right. We'll talk to you next time, Diane. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Great.
Bye-bye.
A packin'. A packin'.
A packin'.
She started that organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, she's she's the founder, president, and CEO of the American Association on Post-Acute Care Nursing.
Yeah, a packin'. It used to be ANAC.
Yeah.
Now it's a packin'.
She has an amazing background. I mean, she worked on the MDS 3.0 in the early 90s. For those of us that work on nursing home cases or deal with nursing home, the MDS is a very well-known assessment and data tool. So that's amazing that she did that.
She's OG.
Yeah, OG.
OG MDS.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to – I have one announcement, a little housekeeping matter. There is a certain individual that's sitting at this table that is not me.
Mm-hmm.
That as of Wednesday will be 41 years old.
41.
Will Smith turning 41.
41.
The big 4-1.
Yep.
So what are your plans?
Nothing. I never really celebrate my birthday. I mean, 30 was kind of a cool, you know, like, hey, I'm in my 30s, and 40 was, you know, finally a milestone. Hey, I'm 40 years old, but now it's, who cares, you know?
You know what we need to do is we need to, like, do, like, from now, forever, from now on.
Yeah.
Is we're going to go out, you and I, to a steak place mm-hmm. and consume that many, whatever the year is, that many ounces in tomahawk steak.
Oh, they've got a 40-ounce tomahawk steak. No problem.
Yeah. We need to go to Marcel's. We haven't been to Marcel's yet for the tomahawk.
And they have a côte de bœuf, which is a French method of it's just a big French steak.
Where they cook it in like beef fat?
I'm not really sure how they do it, to be honest with you, but it looks amazing.
But 41, I remember that. I remember turning 41.
Yeah, 6 months ago.
Yeah, had a taco party. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, all right. Well, with that, happy birthday to Will. You can consume each and every episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast every Monday morning on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or on our on the YouTube channel, or you can listen wherever you get your podcasts from. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.